you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you, I hope that it's fair.
Everyone loves you.
Knowing you're near, so good to see you. We hope that it's clear. Everyone loves you.
Reading from Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 4 and 5.
Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders. Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 4 and 5.
Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Friday, July 19th, 2024, and that was the voice of Tad Jagus reading a portion of some of the topics we'll cover today out of Nehemiah chapter 4. I don't think we'll get into 5. Maybe that'll be for next week, but we'll be looking at Nehemiah chapter 4. And this program, along with the last 6 or 7 weeks, are all archived at greatnewsradio.org. and WLUJ.org. And I mention that because Pastor Jason Schiffo from the Community Evangelical Free Church in Muhammad has been walking us through this book of Nehemiah, basically word by word, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. And so if you want to know a little more about Nehemiah and what God would say to you, then listen to those archive programs. I believe you'll be blessed by it. And so today we'll be looking at chapter 4. But I wanted to say something about Tad Jagus, the voice of the person that read the opening verses here. He's going to probably be on this coming Wednesday's edition of Mark and Friends. He wrote the front page story in our Prime Life Times publication called Imagination in Steel. And I think you're going to want to tune in and learn about a special open house that'll be happening in Bloomington. But if you have your edition of the Prime Life Times this Wednesday, pull it out and we're going to have an interview on why he wrote the story and what to learn from it and why to be excited to be in Bloomington later on this month. So, Pastor Jason Schiffo, appreciate your faithfulness of studying God's Word, loving to proclaim it. Your desire is that believers would grow and be nurtured in their faith journey, but you also have a heart for the unchurched, those that maybe are unfamiliar with the Scripture. And you've said many times, it's like God's instruction manual, it's his love letter, it's to reveal who God is and how he delights and desires to be involved in our lives. So what might we glean today out of Nehemiah chapter 4?
Well, I think that we're going to talk about the same thing that we have been talking about consistently, which is how do we deal with difficulty when we're doing God's work? I mean, that's really what Nehemiah is about at its core. Nehemiah is doing what God has called Nehemiah to do. And as Nehemiah does what God has called him to do, there is opposition, there is trouble. It makes me think of the first chapter in Peter, which says, rejoice when you face trials of various kinds because they test your faithfulness. They reveal your faithfulness. They reveal where your hope is. And so what Nehemiah is consistently showing us is what it looks like to do God's work in the midst of difficulty. Has anybody ever done something that God's called them to do here and it's not gone well or it's been difficult along the way?
Yes.
I think everything the Lord's called me to do, there's been resistance.
Sure. And so we shouldn't be surprised. In fact, that's what James tells his listeners in the first chapter of James, right? Don't be surprised when you face trials of various kinds. Why? Because we know that we have an enemy who is constantly trying to come against that good work with difficulties, with trouble, with persecution, with problems.
I always thought that meant you were probably on the right track.
Sometimes I think we're on the right track. Let's not discount those. Sometimes we just make mistakes along the way, and we make life more difficult than we need to for ourselves. But that's not what's happening with Nehemiah. In fact, just going back a little bit to the beginning of chapter 4, the same cast of characters that Nehemiah has already run into hear that they're getting to work to rebuild the wall. And it says that Sambalat, the version I'm using, say he exploded with anger, vilifying the Jews, and that he was frustrated, and he says, what are these miserable Jews doing? Do they think they can get everything back to normal overnight, making stones out of maple leaf? He's saying, listen, you guys really think you can do this work? It's overwhelming. It's too much. Come on, there's no way you'll ever get it done. And in fact, Tobiah the Amorite jumps in and he says, that's right, what do they think they're building? If a fox climbs on that wall, it'll fall down. Basically saying, you're building for nothing. The thing isn't even going to stand up. But they're doing God's work. See, this thing that Nehemiah is doing, it isn't as much about building a wall as it is rebuilding God's people and giving them hope, reclaiming the hope that they should have in Him. That's an ongoing building project that we're all a part of. We're all a part of reminding one another, encouraging one another, bearing one another's burdens along the way to help us remember that we've been called to something greater. And that in the midst of all of that, we're going to face opposition. Nehemiah faces opposition, Jesus faces opposition, Paul faced opposition, Peter, James, go down the line. There's nobody in the Bible who isn't following God who doesn't face some sort of opposition. In fact, to your point, Ted, sometimes when there is a lack of opposition when you're doing God's work, you might want to question if it is God's work.
I think another thing you've taught us, Jason, through these many verses and these four chapters is the importance of prayer and how Nehemiah, first and foremost, is always very diligent or intentional in how he prays and approaches God.
Well, I think that's one way that we know that Nehemiah is focused on God's work. Because when opposition comes against him, when difficulty comes, what's his first thing he does?
Praise.
He prays. Why? Because he goes back to the foreman of the work project. He goes back to the guy who's in charge of the work. Nehemiah says, listen, I'm just here to do the work too. Let me go back and let's talk to God about this. By the way, he also, very much like what the latter half of Ephesians 6 teaches us, he understands rightly where the true battle is. Tobiah, Sambalot, they're just being influenced by a greater enemy. And so he goes to the one who fights that battle. He goes to God. And that's what it says in verse 4 and 5. He prayed, oh, listen to us, dear God. We're despised. They ridicule us. Our enemies are saying they're going to cart us off like war trophy. What are we going to do? And he becomes emboldened through that prayer. Because then it says in verse 6, we kept at it, repairing and rebuilding the wall. And it says the whole wall was soon joined together and halfway to its intended height. So they're how far in the work?
Halfway.
I don't know about you, but whenever I'm doing something, halfway is always the hardest part. Halfway getting something done seems like the hardest part because you can't see the finish line yet, but you also can't see where you started. And so you're kind of in the middle of it. And that's the time when you're like, you know, maybe I should go get a sandwich. Maybe get a drink. Maybe I'll check my email real quick. And the next thing you know, you never go back to the work.
Yes.
Well, they're halfway through the work. So they prayed, they got back to work, now they're halfway through the work, and then what happens? Verse 7 and 9 says, when Sambalat, Tobiah, and the Arabs, and the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the repairs of the wall of Jerusalem were going so well, that the breaks in the wall were being fixed, they were absolutely furious. So now halfway through the work, when the people might be in that position where they can't see where they began, and they can't see where they're going to end, and they're right in the middle of it, their enemies are coming back again. Difficulty is rearing its head again. And it says they put their heads together and decided to fight against Jerusalem and create as much trouble as they could. Why? Because I think at this point the people are susceptible to the effects of that trouble. And what does it say now? Listen, this is almost like a dance, isn't it? We countered with prayer to our God. So remember earlier they gave it, and then at verse 4 or 5, Nehemiah prayed. Then they come back at it, they're going to give them some more trouble, and then it says, we countered with prayer to our God and set a round-the-clock guard against them. I find this to be really interesting. Why do you think this might be interesting? They set themselves to prayer, but also to set a guard round the clock.
Yeah.
Just seems like a good idea. You know, your enemies are out there looking for you. And I'm thinking they would probably have loved nothing more than to fall on them while they were praying and undefended.
Yep. Anybody else? What does Jesus say about a situation like this? He says to be wise at, or shrewd as?
Vipers.
And pure as?
Doves.
Nehemiah goes, there's a human power that is being influenced and wants to attack us. We would be silly not to set around the clock guard. But at the same time, we are not going to stop praying. In this verse, Nehemiah navigates both of those things. He navigates the spiritual and the physical at the same time. He says, I don't want to discount either one. But notice what he does first, in a sense. It doesn't say we sat around the clock guard and then prayed. It says we prayed and then sit around the clock guard. Because listen, who is always on guard?
Jesus.
Yeah, God.
Jesus. Yes.
Yeah.
24/7, he never leaves us.
Yeah. Now remember, we're halfway in the middle of the work. Things are probably tough. The enemy is rearing its head. Difficulties coming. Things are not getting easier. They're getting harder. Now they're praying, but they also have a round-the-clock guard. And then it says in verse 10, but soon word was going around in Judah. The builders are tired. The rubbish is piling up. We're in over our heads. We can't possibly build this wall.
Rumors.
It reminds me, every fall this happens. Now, it's not so prevalent now because we move, but years ago we had a tree. And this tree, it seemed like it would give like endless amounts of leaves. And when my son went out to rake the leaves, in the middle of raking the leaves, he would tell me, it's like it's never ending. Is it ever going to stop? I'm so tired. Oh, I just want to quit. And I would say no. But that's right where the people are. They're in the middle of it. Opposition has come. Difficulty has come. They can't see where they began. They can't see the finish line yet. They see this round-the-clock guard. They know that there's probably a tension in and amongst all the workers because of all this that's happening. And they say, why are we even doing this? We're tired. Are we even doing anything good? They begin to doubt.
That's why we have to have prayer, to remind everybody that God is in charge.
Yep.
And that's what gives them hope.
Yeah. And listen, the enemy loves doubt, right? Because it says here, and all this, at this time, our enemies were saying, they won't know what hit them. We'll get them. We're going to attack them. Why? Because the enemy sees an opening, sees a moment of doubt, sees a moment of, can we even do this? Can we even make this happen? And the enemy forgets, because he's prideful, that God is always on the job. Because I love verse 12. It says, the Jews who were their neighbors reported. So the enemies are going, we're going to get them. Now's the time to attack them. But they happen to be neighbors to some God-fearing Jews who are loyal to the project that God has instituted, who are like, I think we heard that they're going to attack. You know, they heard them from over the fence in the backyard.
Yep.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That God always creates a way. It reminds me of later on when they're going to get the Apostle Paul, and the young boy hears that the apostle, that they're going to get Paul, and he goes and warns them ahead of time. Why? Because God has always has faithful ears listening for what the unfaithful will be doing.
And why do we forget that all the time?
We do, don't we? And it says, and they have us surrounded, they're going to attack, and if we heard it once, we heard it 10 times, which means the enemy keeps talking, these loyal Jews hear it, they come and they report it to Nehemiah. So it says, Nehemiah stationed armed guards at the most vulnerable places of the walls and assigned people by families with their swords, their lances, and their bows. After looking things over, I stood up and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and everyone else and said, do not be afraid of them. Put your minds on God, on the Master, the great and awesome one. Then fight for your brothers and your sons and your daughters and your wives and your homes. Nehemiah says, listen, We're gonna have to pick up our swords. But our trust isn't in the sword, is it? Our trust is in God, who is great and awesome, who is our Master. And if we must fight, we're fighting for our sons and our daughters and our wives and our families.
Jason, I don't know if this was brought up a few weeks ago, but we talked about the importance of encouragement, and maybe 10 times you have to encourage. And when I see this told us 10 times over, I was just thinking again, that reminder how we should say 10 times the amount of encouragement instead of the criticism. And here, 10 times is referred to again. I didn't know if there was a correlation to look back where they needed to be encouraged 10 times.
I just think that it's just repetition. Repetition is the best teacher. Repetition is the best reminder. And so then it says in verse 15, our enemies learned that we knew all about their plan. So I love that too, right? They get up there, they got their swords and their lances, and they're emboldened by the work that they're doing for God, who is great and awesome, and they're willing to fight for their families. And their enemies learn about it. Just the same way that God let them know that their enemies were going to attack, God lets their enemies know that they know. And I love this. Our enemies learned that we knew all about their plan and that God had frustrated it. Who's the one who frustrated the plan?
God.
Listen, I love to watch this show on the internet. It's on YouTube. And it's this Navy SEAL guy. And what this Navy SEAL guy does is he calls up people that he sees pictures of on the internet who are wearing Navy uniforms but have never been in the Navy. And the thing is called Stolen Valor. And the thing is he says in order to wear the Navy uniform, in order to wear that Navy SEAL thing, you have to have served. You have to have done the things. You don't get to wear the thing unless you do the thing. And so he says, I have no tolerance for stolen valor. We as Christians should have no tolerance for stolen valor where God is concerned. God gets all the glory and God gets all the credit. And whenever we see a brother or sister go, look what I did, we go, look what God did. Because God's the one who frustrated the plan. Not Nehemiah, not the people, not anybody else. It was God who did all of it.
And I'm thinking, Jason, as followers of Jesus, we should exhibit valor because of who we serve and represent. I mean, if we truly trust that God works in us, that he lives in us, that he wants to work through us, we should be victorious in all aspects of life, really, if we take to heart that his spirit abides in us.
And so it says that they learned, our enemies learned that we knew all about their plan, that God had frustrated it. And then it says, and we went back to work on the wall. The work continues. The enemy's going to try and frustrate it. God's got that cover. We're going to get back to work. That's what we're going to do. And then the verses go on to just say that they were watchful, but they were working. I think there's a lesson for us here. Don't be so watchful that you stop working. And don't be working so much that you're not watchful.
Amen.
As we're doing the things the Lord called us to do, we need to keep an eye to what's going on around us. At the same time, we need to not let our looking around stop us from working. That's one of the things that my kids sometimes have a problem with. You'll ask them to do something, and then you stop to talk to them. They can't talk and work at the same time. The minute I say, like, hey, I start to talk, they like stand there with the rake in their hand and they start talking. I'm like, no, we can do two things at one time here. We can do it all. And I hear my wife say the same thing in the kitchen because she's with the girls and they're making something in the kitchen. And she's like, you can roll that dough and talk at the same time. But that's what's happening here. They're working and they're being watchful. And then it says in verse 19, then I spoke to the nobles and the officials and everyone else. There's a lot of work going on here, and we're spread out all along the wall, separated from one another. When you hear a trumpet call, join us there. Our God will fight for us. Nehemiah just says, listen, there's a lot going on here. We can easily lose track of what's happening. If you hear the trumpet call, that means something's going on, and you can know that God's going to fight for us, that God's got this. Notice who Nehemiah keeps giving credit to. He keeps leaning on. He keeps saying is the one who's in charge. Who is it?
God.
Yeah. We can never stop reminding ourselves of that because we are so hardwired for stolen valor. And it says, and so we kept working from the first light until the stars came out, half of us holding our lances. I also instructed the people, each person and his helpers, to stay inside Jerusalem, guard by night and work by day. They're hard at it, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because whose work is this?
It's the Lord's work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, how we do the Lord's work says a whole lot about what we think about the Lord. Mm-hmm. What does Colossians 3:23 say, Mark?
Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when I see people working for the Lord and they're getting kind of lazy, I'm like, what does that say to people about God?
Yeah, Christians should be the best workers, the most industrious, and given God intuition on things because of the wisdom. You know what, that James passage, if you lack wisdom, ask for it. So if you're in a career or position, whatever you're working at, ask God to help you get ideas or be more productive. And people watch that and see that and notice it.
So as we close chapter 4, the people are working, the people are watchful. They're diligent. They're working from morning until the stars come out at night. Then they're taking turns watching over one another at night. You know, when I read this, it makes me think that God is doing a darn good job of rebuilding a people. They're taking care of one another. They're watching over one another. They're doing this together, giving all the credit to the Lord. The Lord is guiding them and leading them. He is building a wall, but he is really building a people. Hmm. And rebuilding a people that are going to be able to worship him there in Jerusalem.
Amen.
Pastor Jason, before we close out the program, I want to do an FYI. It's kind of a fun one, and I know you and I are still working this out, and you're working on your message for Sunday, but I think I'm bringing my recording equipment to the Evangelical Free Church of Mahomet this Sunday, and we're going to have it as our Monday broadcast, some of your message, some interaction. And if you don't have a church home or a later or an early service, and you can make it to the Community Evangelical Free Church in Mahomet right on Route 47 and the corner of Route 47 and Riverbend Boulevard, there's a 10 o'clock service, and I'll bring my recording equipment, and the congregation will participate. Jason will preach a God-honoring message, and you can be a part of Monday's broadcast, so we'll tape Sunday for Monday. But I invite you, if you don't have a church home, or maybe because of the timing of your services, you can make it out by 10 a.m. to the Mahomet Community Evangelical Free Church. You're invited. I hope you'll continue listening to our conversation on Nehemiah and the days ahead. Each Friday, we've been carving out about 20, 25 minutes to talk through this great book that has something for all of us. We always try to find points of application. So I hope as you tune into our broadcast today, maybe it's through music or a message or a devotional thought, you feel like God's speaking directly to you. Because if that's your prayer each and every day, Lord, order my steps. He will. And he desires to exhibit his love and his care for you, but also to have you proclaim his good news message as you go, wherever you go, because you are his ambassador. You can be that faithful follower of Jesus as you ask him to walk with you each and every day. And that's what this group of friends does as we meet. And you can be a part of the future Mark and Friends programs. We meet on Wednesday at the Salvation Army Red Shield Center in Champaign. We'd love to have you. It's always fun, and we have extra time after the broadcast to just pray and share life stories. And again, remember, this coming Wednesday we'll have Tad Jagish read his story from the front cover of the Prime Life Times, Imagination in Steel. It's a special open house coming to Bloomington on July 27th and 28th. More to say about that on Wednesday. But thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns, Pastor Jason Schiffo, and a room of friends with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you, and have a great day, night, and weekend.